Agenda item number nine. Mr. Briggs?
Okay, originally we were going to take items 9 and 10 together. Item 9 is the basic plan amendment, updating on-site wastewater system criteria for the entire region. And item 10 is the companion general conditional waiver of waste discharge requirements for on-site systems. We have a change in that, the board is sort of a jury of peers, I guess you'd say, and what that means is that you're also dischargers. So on the board today, I think we have a mix of half and half as far as those who use septic tanks and those who use community collection systems. And consequently, we have a legal reason that you can't actually take up item 10, the general conditional waiver waste discharge requirements, because of the nature of that item. And so we're recommending, you have to actually not consider today. It's pulled from the agenda for the legal reason. And then also, we had talked earlier internally, we talked earlier in the week about that item number 10, the conditional waiver of the resolution, and actually considered putting in a delayed effective date. In other words, putting in something that say it wouldn't be effective until X months down the road. And the reason for that is because it anticipates that we will be updating the Memorandum of Understanding, MOUs, with the local permitting jurisdictions for septic systems, the counties and in some cases cities that have septic systems. So we had talked about the potential benefit of actually delaying the effectiveness of that. So that's actually a secondary reason, I guess you'd say, and rationale for why we're probably not going to be set back any as far as not being able to take up agenda item number 10. And then thirdly, I'd say that the vast majority of the comments that we received on the items today actually have to do with item 9, the basin plan amendment. So what we'll be doing is bringing back the conditional waiver as conformed as a basin plan amendment similar to item 9 so that you can all participate on that. But in the meantime, we will be proceeding with item 9 today. And like I said, that's where we've had the most interest in comments anyway. So with that preamble, just a reminder, we're not taking up item 10 today. So we'll go to item 9, and Sorrel Marks of our staff will be making our presentation.
And if there's any member of the public that wishes to address us on this item, I would appreciate getting your speaker cards sooner than later.
We're having just a couple of technical difficulties, so maybe if I could just remind everyone that there are a couple of corrections sheets in the back of the room. There's a yellow sheet with corrections to this item, and some copies of late letters that came in if anybody wanted to look at those.
So, did we get copies of those letters in our...
Yes, you should have those in your agenda package.
There's one exception, I think. We just got a letter last night.
Yes, right. Yes. That is not copied at the back of the room. And
right. And since we have a little delay in getting the presentation started, I'll just go ahead and cover that one.
Go ahead.
Last night we got a letter from Heal the Ocean, sent by Hillary Hauser, Executive Director. It's about both items, but I'll just cover her comments on item 9 that we're taking up today. It says, Heal the Ocean has been working on septic system problems in Santa Barbara County since 1998, most notably the South Coast Beach Community Septic to Sewer Project, RINCON, and would appreciate the following be read into the record. Regarding the Basin Plan Amendment, Heal the Ocean urges the Regional Board to approve this resolution without further delay. This action is long overdue and sorely needed. This resolution will institute much needed action that will do much to improve ocean water quality problems in Santa Barbara County, particularly RINCON and the beaches of the Santa Barbara South Coast. Thank you, Hillary Hauser, Executive Director. this laptop. That's right. Mr. Chair, do you want to take a break?
As long as we've got an opportunity. Size in case we need to do it on it.
Okay. We'll take a break for 10 minutes. Is that enough time to troubleshoot what's going on?
I don't know. Did we switch it back?
Yeah, we did.
We won't know until you get into it, okay? Okay, folks, we are ready to resume this agenda item. If everybody would take their seats, we can start this agenda item. Thank you very much. Okay, Mr. Briggs, agenda item 9.
Yes, I'm not going to repeat what I said before, so we'll go straight to Sorrel Marks for our presentation.
Okay, sorry for that delay. Good morning, Chairman Young, Water Board members. This item is about updating our basin plan criteria for on-site systems. And when we're talking about on-site systems, we're primarily talking about septic systems, but there are other types of systems besides just the conventional septic systems. There's also a variety of upgrades, so we sort of generally refer to all of them as on-site systems. Now, the objectives for this item are to update the 25-year-old basin plan criteria for on-site systems. We want to make sure that these criteria provide for long-term water quality protection. And we also want to make sure that systems that are installed remain the low-maintenance, low-cost, low-tech expectation for septic systems. I would like to point out that these criteria don't require retrofit of properly functioning existing systems. There seemed to be some confusion in comments that we got, so I just wanted to make that point. The existing basin plan criteria was adopted in 1983 through Resolution 8312, and it includes siting, design, construction, maintenance, and management criteria. For the most part, those criteria are voluntary. There are a few requirements, but they're mainly in the form of recommended actions. And we have historically implemented them through memoranda of understanding with the local permitting agencies, the counties, and in some cases cities. And those permitting agencies have applied these criteria through their locally issued permits. I'll just briefly go over the CEQA compliance associated with this basin plan amendment. But keep in mind that when we're considering CEQA, we're looking at physical changes, either direct or indirect changes, that can reasonably be expected from this project. Now, the Water Board complied with the California Environmental Quality Act, CEQA. It's exempt from the normal procedural requirements, but there is a substitute environmental document in your agenda package today. This is an update of existing regulations, and a new regulatory process is not being proposed, and we're not proposing a specific project approval. There's not an on-site system that's being proposed with these. It's a strengthening of environmental regulations, and we have implemented the standard public participation processes. So these issues are covered in the substitute environmental document, and we don't anticipate significant environmental impacts associated with this action. As I mentioned earlier, the existing systems, these criteria do not require retrofit of properly functioning systems. They do call for, if a system fails, then that system should be repaired in accordance with the basin plan criteria to the greatest extent practicable. Now, in some cases, let's say you have a system on a steep slope, obviously the slope is there. If it fails, you need to properly engineer a system to work with those site conditions. But there is an expectation here, requirement that upgrades or the repairs will be consistent with the basin plan criteria. Now, existing systems will be addressed through on-site management plans that are required in these criteria. And those requirements, those on-site management plans will include characterizing potential water quality impacts associated with existing systems. They will have inspection, monitoring, maintenance, and repair components. And they will also have public education and disclosure components in those on-site management plans. Now, the proposed revisions primarily fall into the category of strengthening recommendations to requirements. As I mentioned, they require on-site management plans. The existing basin plan criteria recommend these plans. There are specific components that are required to be addressed in those on-site management plans. Discharges from systems on slopes in excess of 20% are required to be designed by a certified professional. And system maintenance is required. Currently, it is recommended. The current recommendation to not put sulfur-generating water softener brine into septic systems is strengthened into a requirement that will be prohibited unless you have a salts minimization plan. And as described in the staff report, over the last several months, I've met with counties and the local permitting agencies throughout the region to discuss these issues. And one of the things that has come up in each of those meetings is that the local agencies need for our criteria to be set in the form of requirements, because they cannot effectively implement through their own permitting programs the recommendations. There are some additional changes that don't fall into that strengthening of recommendation to requirements. One of them is adding some definitions for clarification. We are streamlining the definition of water course and adding a requirement for additional treatment for systems discharging to very fast percolating soils. The existing prohibition of discharge from on-site systems within a 10-year floodplain is proposed to be changed to a 25-year floodplain. And disposal in fill material, although allowed, it does require that the fill be designed specifically as a disposal area. And as I mentioned earlier, these provisions are applicable to new systems. Now, the on-site management plans are probably the most significant change we're proposing here, so I'd like to just touch on what's proposed to be incorporated as the components of those on-site management plans.
Zorro?
Yes.
And just for clarification, the on-site management plan is the plan that the permitting agency or entity would be formulating?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
And it's specifically designed to address the issues within their jurisdiction.
Okay, thank you.
Now, the plan would include an evaluation of existing on-site systems, ground and surface water monitoring will be a component of the management plans. They would include projections for on-site system disposal demand and how to meet that demand. There will be recommendations as well as requirements for inspection, monitoring, maintenance, and repairs. Recommendation for both existing and recommendations for new wastewater systems. And I should probably point out, as I go through these items, the things that are underlined are the new additions. We have in the existing basin plan components for on-site management plans, and the segments that are not underlined are part of the existing basin plan language, same as it appears in your agenda package. Additionally, the management plans need to address disposal in the event that the on-site systems fail. They would include an outreach and an education component, enforcement options, a septic management component, and administration record keeping. Now, the existing basin plan language has several additional components that we're proposing be deleted from the language. As you've seen by your agenda package, there's a considerable amount of comments have come in on this item. They're summarized in the end of the original staff report as well as the supplemental staff report. A great many of those comments were on the potential costs of developing and implementing on-site management plans. However, many of the local permitting agencies that I've had discussions about these potential cost issues have indicated that a lot of the activities that will be included in an on-site management plan, they're already implementing. So we're not anticipating that those costs will be as significant as indicated in some of the comment letters. Now, we also received several comments about Assembly Bill 885 regulations. That's the statewide septic system criteria that the state board and a stakeholder work group has been working on developing for the last several years. Regional boards are actually required to be consistent with those criteria, so when those are actually adopted, they're in draft form right now. When they're adopted, they will be incorporated into our criteria. I have had conversations with State Board staff, Todd Thompson, who's leading that effort in developing those regulations, and he assured us that the basin planning process is in addition to those criteria. The 885 regulations are not intended to replace the basin planning process, and it's his expectation that our criteria will be more stringent than those statewide regulations.
Sorrell?
Yes.
Do the draft 885 regulations overlap with this basin plan amendment at all? Is there any competition between language or requirements?
There are some areas where they address, there's a variety of areas where they address similar issues. In most cases, our criteria is actually more stringent than what is currently proposed, but I have to say that we're on the fourth or fifth proposal, and so we're not sure what the resulting regulations are going to be. There is some overlap, yes.
Does State Water Board staff have any projection for when their regs will be in final form?
No, they don't.
Okay.
We did receive quite a few comments about public notice. There was a perception that these criteria were going to require significant changes to existing systems. And so everyone owning an existing on-site system should have been notified, and that's not actually the case. We have several letters that came after your agenda package, and you have copies of them in your package, I believe. But I'd just like to very briefly review what those are, since they're not summarized in your staff report. On top of the package, there's a letter from the City of Atascadero requesting delay of this item's consideration until further public participation in their community. We have a letter from Ventura County indicating that they shared the concern of some of the other permitting agencies with developing on-site management plans. However, the small portion of their county that is in the areas of Ventura County that are in the Central Coast region are have very low density development. Parcel sizes average in the neighborhood of 40 acres, and the Ventura County on-site criteria is at least as stringent or more stringent than ours. So that was the basis of their comments. There is a comment letter from a real estate broker named Mary Arnold, and she expresses her concern about potential limitations to building secondary units. She expressed a concern over requirements to treat stormwater, but I believe that was actually a different issue. And a concern that we were requiring greater percolation rates than are required in state law. And there's actually not a proposed change to where percolation rates come into this criteria is for separation to groundwater, that sort of thing. And then her last comment was a request to wait until the state adopt the statewide regulations before proceeding with this. There's a brief comment from Sandra Dishon, who disagrees with the proposal and hopes it will be reconsidered. A note from a staff member of Monterey County indicating that they actually preferred a 50-year floodplain setback rather than the 25-year because information is more readily available on 50-year floodplains. A brief message from David Dugan encouraging us to review the federal and state requirements and encouragement about water recycling. And then a request for a demonstration today about a soil testing kit.
So,
yes.
On the comment from Monterey County, you didn't respond to the comment. Were you going to cover that later, or?
I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. Wasn't here. The comment from Monterey County was a request to expand the setback from floodplains, the prohibition that is currently in the basin plan for a 10-year floodplain, to expand it to a 50-year floodplain. We're actually proposing a 25-year floodplain, although there's no requirements in this proposal that would limit the county from expanding it further if they chose to do that. One of the ways of implementing that, because information is more readily available for the 50-year floodplain, would be to, on the relatively rare occasion when projects come up that are within that flood zone area, then they could be evaluated on a case-by-case basis through the county's local permitting process.
Also, if they have the 50-year flood information, then they know that it'll meet the 25-year. So
right, because it would be more
question would
protective.
Be right.
Okay, I know this overhead is really jam-packed, but it the same information is on a yellow sheet in your agenda package. And these are corrections to Attachment A, which is the proposed basin plan language itself. It's in your agenda package. And the changes in Attachment A are shown in strikeout and underline for those that are strikeout or proposed to be deleted. But I'll just briefly run through what these are.
Sorrel, are you numbering your paragraph? We have two columns on these pages, right in Attachment A. Are you numbering your paragraphs down the left side and then continuing on to the right side?
Let's see. For those that I've actually numbered the paragraph, it's only on the left side. When I have that, the little number sign or pound sign there, that's actually for the requirement or recommendation number that shows up in the text.
Okay.
So, for example, the first one on paragraph paragraph 2. Page 2, the application area definition, we're just proposing to strike out also called sidewall. Just makes it a little bit more confusing with that in there.
Okay. And for page 4, that's paragraph 3, right?
Yes, that's paragraph 3 in the left column. And substantial is third line from the bottom. We're proposing to delete that. And again, on page 11, that is in number 14. It's on the right-hand column. On page 5, we're proposing to leave the lined out, the strikeout language in place, to leave that as it appears in the existing basin plan. On page 7, paragraph 1, the underlined version at the underlined language at the end of that paragraph, we're proposing to delete that entirely. It's redundant with the definition of new systems.
Sorrell?
Yes?
Can we go back to page 5?
Yes.
Item 3. I'm assuming that while you're going to leave the underline, you're going to take out should be?
I'm sorry, we must be looking at cross purposes here. I'm on number 3 rather than paragraph 3.
I'm on number 3.
Recommendation 3?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Let's see.
If you're going to leave the cross out, then you're going to have to take out something.
Right, right.
Okay.
So that it will read let's see. It may be appropriate for on-site systems to be maintained by local maintenance districts. So,
thanks.
Right. We'll make it grammatical. Thank you. Let's see, have I covered 8? Item 8, or page 8, item 13, there's several areas in the existing basin plan language that refer to on-site systems being limited to 1 acre per system, but one of them actually includes some language about if soil conditions or physical constraints are particularly favorable, the parcel size shall not be less than 1/2 acre. And that language is actually proposed to be deleted, but it's not shown in your agenda package, so I want to make sure that you knew it was there. We have, over the years, had considerable challenges defining what exactly particularly favorable meant. Now, on page 8, number 21, we inadvertently dropped a footnote that we'd like to replace there. The footnote's in the existing basin plan. And it says, unless a setback distance of at least 250 feet to any domestic water supply well or surface water is ensured. And on page 8, number 23, we'd like to add the requirement that additional treatment is required for seepage pits discharging to gravel soils. That would be consistent with the earlier requirement for very fast percolating soils.
Sorrell?
Yes.
I don't know how this is going to come out in the final version, but On the one I have, the footnote for 21 is actually at the top of page 9, and it's rather confusing. And I don't see a corresponding number to indicate there would be a footnote.
You mean 23?
Right.
No, 21.
The version that's in your agenda package has a whole bunch of lined-out material in it, so it's going to look different when it's actually in the final form.
Okay, but there also then needs to be a footnote number on item 21?
Yes.
Okay, there will be.
Yes. Yes, okay. And the footnote
will be at the bottom of the page.
Will be right there with that one. Yeah, that footnote was actually on a couple of different items, and when I deleted the footnote, I accidentally deleted it from all of them, and that was not intentional.
Okay, just to make sure we have a clear final product.
Yeah. Okay, so just to review the issues at hand today, we're trying to update the basin plan criteria to provide the needed clarification and the strengthening of requirements rather than suggestions or recommendations to make sure that these criteria will adequately protect surface water, groundwater, and public health. So that concludes my presentation recommending adopting the resolution 2008-0005 with the corrections that are on your yellow handout. And as described in the staff report, what your board adopts today will be forwarded to the State Board and the Office of Administrative Law for their review and approval. Now, I know we have quite a few people who would like to speak on this item, and if I could throw out a suggestion that the local permitting agencies possibly go first. They are our partners in implementing this criteria, and so I think it's important to hear from them right off the bat.
I do have them up at the top.
Thank you.
Two questions for you. One is a possible wording clarification on page 4 of the of attachment A. On the left-hand column, second paragraph from the bottom, should the word homeowners be changed to property owners? Because I think that whole section deals with anyone who might have an on-site wastewater system.
Yeah, good point, because they're not always homeowners.
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. So that should be part of the changes that are in the supplemental sheet. And then the second question is, when this item comes before the State Board, is that publicly noticed and people can have their input at that time also? Do you know?
I believe so.
Yes, they can.
They can?
They're provide, I believe, a 30-day notice and then have a item before the State Board.
Okay.
I did want to say that at the conclusion of the public comment, it's important to have the staff have an opportunity to review and respond to any new issues that may be raised in the public comment.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Any board questions or comments at this time?
Yeah, just a quick one.
Mr. Shallcross?
This is for Francis, our attorney. At what point does this item become appealable?
There's no petition process for basin plan amendments. It goes to the State Board, and the item becomes final when the Office of Administrative Law approves it. And at that point, someone could file a lawsuit challenging.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Dr. Hunter.
Thank you. Thank you, Searle, for your presentation and summarizing the public comments. I really appreciated that because I also saw those themes running through, so I'm glad that you were able to consider collectively how we can address those as this process moves forward. There were two issues that I wanted to raise, one which you didn't mention, the other one which you did, and so I'll start with the one you didn't mention, which was questions about environmental justice issues. And I did, I understand that water board or regional board actions are not subject to the CEQA process, but we are required to meet CEQA, be consistent with CEQA. And I'm aware that Cal EPA as well as US EPA have environmental justice policies and guidelines, and in fact, I think they even have programs in order to address the environmental justice issues. And I'm aware that the, at least I didn't see in the CEQA checklist, that there is a section that considers what the environmental justice impact might be or how those issues might look in terms of considering low-income and communities of color. There are other ways of referring to low-income and less advantaged communities, I think is another term I've heard under Prop 50 and Prop 84. I think the reason that it's important to me is not that I feel that these are issues that should delay or prevent important regulatory actions from occurring, but that it provides an opportunity for communities to establish what these issues might be in order to take advantage of the programs that are available to address these impacts. So if we don't, in our process, allow for a way to at least recognize that cities and counties and the local responsible agencies, the permitting agencies, do have to consider on a community basis how changes over the long term occur that were costs for improving the environment, protecting the environment. So I would like to, I have two questions for you on that one. One is, our CEQA checklist doesn't address environmental justice issues, and I'm curious if there's anything coming out of State Board to update how that CEQA checklist incorporates environmental justice questions. The second one is, and this gets back to the outreach, if you address that in your workshops or meetings with those communities, because I understand you're working with your partners and that those partners are largely not individual communities, but more at the city and county level. If you address that in any fashion in recognizing the need for them to communicate these changes and how they were going to be conducting their education and outreach, if there would be an environmental justice dimension to what they're doing. And then I think if I could switch then tracks to the outreach, I do have a question regarding the regional board's meeting the spirit of public outreach in terms of the working with your partners in terms of MOUs and agreements to the local responsible agencies. But I note in your responses that if a local responsible agency fails to meet its requirement for, say, an on-site management plan, or if they cite cost factors or other delays and they don't take the responsible action, they don't meet basin plan, the basin plan amendment criteria, then I see in your response that individual homeowners will be held responsible. So that does raise the issue that ultimately, or not homeowner, but local property owner, so it does raise the issue that I think we have to look at how that ultimate outreach occurs. And I'm wondering if we could address something more on the scale of, say, three workshops geographically, strategically located, evening workshops, so that you have a chance as regional board to directly hear from those communities in terms of cost factors. I mean, it's clear what the cost factors are or how those cost factors are structured. It's very clear that that's not an issue that comes up as far as implementing water quality protection. But I think it helps to get better information out directly to the, for example, more rural areas where the on-site septic program is probably going to have more of an impact. And so ultimately, these folks are going to be responsible for picking up whatever doesn't occur in their community over 10 or 15 or 20 years. So, you know, I'm just suggesting that it could be helpful, and gauging from the stack of letters that we received, so many of them really confused about how the cost factors are considered, really confused about the, you know, the existing versus new, and it just seemed to me that it might be helpful, and if we are taking more time, that we might be able to do a couple of evening workshops where we could, and then we could also get a sense of what the environmental justice issues might be in terms of where real economic hardship might occur, given the repairs and the factors that do apply to the existing residents, and how they're going to be, you know, considering that, factoring in terms of maintenance and upkeep on their property. So those would be my comments, and I don't expect answers right now, but I just wanted to put those out for you to consider.
Okay.
Do you want to respond now?
Well, maybe I could address some of them, because I think possibly a lot of future comments will be relating to maybe I wasn't adequately clear on how these criteria are used and applied. When someone is building a or proposing to build a new on-site system, they utilize the basin plan criteria as their yardstick of measure of what's an acceptable system. So this is an update of those criteria, but is proposed to be used in exactly the same manner. You had mentioned that if local permitting agencies don't implement the on-site management plan, then the responsibility is on the property owner. The responsibility of the property owner is to build a system that's consistent with the basin plan criteria, just as it is now. The components of the on-site management plan that most of the agencies have expressed some concern about, relating to monitoring, to groundwater and surface water monitoring, those are not the sort of things that individual homeowners would be doing unless they had an experimental or an alternative system that they needed to demonstrate was working.
Okay, just so I'm clear, if an entity fails to produce an on-site management plan, my understanding is from the comments, your responses to those questions, that ultimately it could go to, or could become the responsibility of the resident, of the property owner. That was my concern about...
Following the basin plan criteria is the responsibility of the on-site system, the property owner. It's usually forced through the local permitting process, but whether it's implemented in the local permitting process or not, it's still the responsibility of the on-site system owner to build a system that's consistent with the criteria. But there are other portions of on-site management plans that would not be individual homeowner responsibility,
right.
You know, public information, tracking some of these systems, and probably the most significant one is characterizing the impact from discharges from on-site systems. You know, the local agencies continue to permit a lot of on-site systems without actually characterizing what the impacts from those mm-hmm. systems might be, but that's not something that is an individual that each individual could do for themselves.
I do understand that, the differences, and so I'm really focusing on those components that could become the responsibility, including the reporting and record keeping, which I understand there's got to be some participation there of the individual residents. So again, I'm just saying there's probably a handful of issues that could be incorporated into a workshop for owners of on-site management systems that the regional board should be conducting in order to get the right information out, the best information out about how the Basin Plan Amendment process works and will go forward. At what point will they be involved? And specifically the idea that if a repair occurs, they are going to be responsible for meeting the amendment criteria. And I think that's where the focus and emphasis of these workshops should fall.
Dr. Hunter, I think that a repair to an existing system would have the same consequences. I mean, the basin plan as it's written now has that requirement. So, I mean, that's not going to change.
I understand that. But I guess, from my view, this is an opportunity to, one, inform people, many of whom aren't aware that they're required to follow the basin plan because they bought a home that met all the standards, met the permits. They've probably done some repairs. I'm guessing some have done repairs and have not had any issues with meeting basin plan criteria because they've been in existence for 25 years. So you have a change at this point that I think could be facilitated with one or two workshops, three workshops, you know, geographically spaced out. I think if the change, you know, if we're proposing a change that hasn't occurred in a very long time affecting individual property owners, we should consider that as an opportunity to do some targeted outreach. And leaving it to, what I see is we're leaving it to the cities, counties, and realtors. And the realtors are the point of contact, and they're not required to do anything. So I do think that we, if we have the time, we should make the effort to do a structured, targeted workshop to the level, not to address the things that we expect our partners in MOUs and agreements, permitting agencies to carry out, but only those aspects that are going to affect the individual residents, because it's very remote from their everyday actions. And I will tell you that a septic repair generally occurs without any warning. And so there you are jumping through hoops, and you have no idea that ultimately you've got a basin plan sitting there that's now requiring could require some very costly changes. And I think just to put the word out, because, you know, I have conducted a lot of public workshops, and what happens is, first of all, it gets you beyond the 30-day notice, one-time information piece that goes into the paper, which is required. It puts out a notice that a meeting is occurring. It doesn't occur. It's very focused, so people do get that this is information they should be paying attention to. After the meeting, a lot of information gets shared in the neighborhoods, and it's very effective. I also think that in some communities we have folks like AGP that come and tape these, and then these things get distributed to homeowners associations, to rural farm bureaus, other folks who have networks that do this kind of information sharing, and we should be plugging into that process. And our point would be to be the ones to conduct the workshop and not rely on misinformation or half information that might be put out through cities and counties only addressing their priorities. I think we have an obligation to clarify what the amendment changes are and how individual property owners could be impacted, and where the existing changes to existing systems will occur. That's my thought.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
I just wanted to comment on your first question about the CEQA checklist. And just so you know, I'm actually working with a group of attorneys in our office to revise the State Water Board's CEQA regulations and the checklist. And I'll bring that back to that group. But just so you know, the checklist is about identifying physical adverse changes to the environment, and typically the environmental justice issues don't relate to physical adverse changes, but it's certainly something to be aware of in the process of doing regulations. And
yeah, I did have a chance to talk with the state board staff person who's heading up the new environmental justice program, and this is certainly a question I would pose to her and see if we can get some follow-up on that, because noting that both EPA and Cal EPA have made an effort to develop a program, And, you know, because we do have monies being directed to these things. So I know Prop 84 has a disadvantaged community component to it. I know the state board and the regional board have some authority in designing those grant programs. If we had more awareness of how environmental justice issues look in our region, we could benefit from those monies. But if we don't have the awareness, then we're not prepared. And I think we have, there's an assumption. We can stereotype ourselves into being upper middle class and thinking that we don't have these issues, but all communities have these issues. And I think it's a hard and difficult process to define how those issues look. But, you know, I think it can be done in a very positive and proactive way so that we're preparing a process that's going to work collaboratively both with our federal partners and our state partners in meeting these issues, because we all know these costs are going up and cities and counties are facing enormous challenges in meeting their service needs. So if there's a new pocket of money to address this, I want to be sure we know about it.
Okay. Any other board comments or questions? All right. Thank you, Dr. Hunter. Why don't we proceed to our speakers? And I've got about 25 cards, so I'm going to limit comment to 2 minutes for each card.